today on Code Pen Radio.
Hey everybody, it's time for Code Pen Radio. This is episode number 274, and this week we are going to be talking about Go, or also known as Golang. It's a programming language that we've been working with a bit here on Team Code Pen. And I'm Marie Mosley. I'm the support lead here at CodePen. And with me today to talk about Go is one of our co-founders, Alex Vasquez. Hey, Alex.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for coming on. You and Dee are the two people who know Go the best, so I had to have one of you.
to qualify that, on this team, not in the world. So.
Well, you know what?
I haven't checked with everyone else, but I'm pretty sure that's accurate.
Yeah. So I called it Go and Golang, but the real name is Go, right? Like that's what it's,
yeah.
That's what it goes by.
Or? Yeah. Go. Whenever you look at the docs, you know, we refer to it as Go. It's just, Golang is far more searchable or Googleable, as the kids say.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I guess the word Go is a little tricky to. Look
yeah.
At,
yeah. So, yeah. Definitely don't name something two letters. That's super common. But you can do it if you create something like Go. That I think you can pretty much name it whatever you want, and we'd still use it.
It seems so. I mean, based on what you have been telling me about it, it is incredibly exciting. They could have called it anything. It's so useful and yeah. So helpful. Actually, I'd really like to just start off with just talking about what it is in the first place. Like, what is Go? When you're talking about the Go language, what do you mean?
We use other languages at CodePen. The other ones we use are JavaScript and Ruby. We run everything on Ruby on Rails for web servers and have some processes in JavaScript and Node.js and things like that. So adding another language to CodePen is a big deal. It's something we don't take lightly. And so for a long time, I've heard about Go, played with it a few years ago, started learning about it slowly over time. Golang itself, it's an open source programming language designed by a few folks at Google who are incredibly talented. They have built other languages, Rob Pike, Ken Thompson. Built a big part of why Unix exists in the world,
oh, wow.
Hence computers exist.
Okay.
So it has a really amazing pedigree. And it comes with a lot of, like, I'd call it wisdom, from my perspective. And so it's this open source programming language that it was built in 2009. So it's a little, younger than JavaScript and Ruby. And so, the intention when they built this new programming language was to create a language that's simple for developers to develop in and where they can be productive very quickly, but without a lot of magic and confusion and complexity. So Go is really interesting because it's one of the languages that is known for what it doesn't have. And yet it's an extremely popular language. There's at least 1 million Go developers at this point. It's very mature. There's a lot of really great flagship products that are written in Go, Kubernetes, Docker, all written in Go. And so it's really, to me, I see it as a programming language that's built for the web and the cloud of today. And so its goals are simplicity and to be non-magical and be very easy to follow and understand. And so it achieves that. But the beautiful part is it also achieves a lot of speed and capability that is kind of hides beneath the surface. And so that's been the number one thing. It's the ability that I can pick up another programming language, endorse it to the rest of the team, where I can say, okay, you can learn this, you can invest time in this, and there'll be almost an instant benefit when you do pick it up and know that it's going to make you very, very productive. Other languages that I've played with, because I love programming languages and tech in general, are things like Rust and Swift, which are great and they're really powerful, but they also have a steep learning curve. So even though I love playing with them and learning about them and trying to develop apps or little CLIs for myself, it's not something that I could endorse to the team, be like, hey, spend 6 months of your life on Rust. We're a small team. We don't have a lot of ability to spend a ton of time learning new tech. And so that's where Go just fit all the right attributes that of like what it would take for us to literally add another programming language, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been great so far. It's really exciting.
So you mentioned non-magical is one of the attributes of it. And I'm curious about that. What does that mean exactly, non-magical?
Oh man. Yeah. So to an old dev like me, there's just this point where something like Ruby on Rails is fairly magical. And it's great once you know it, once you know where that magic comes from. But there are sometimes things that are being created for you dynamically that you just simply have to know and understand by reading documentation. But if you're looking at the code itself, you have no idea where that method or attribute came from because it was created at runtime by the framework. So, for example, there's a method in Ruby on Rails where it says where you can say, for example, find by username, right? And so that attribute doesn't exist at compile time. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist until that method that you're calling on your code. It's not defined anywhere. You couldn't go look it up. Ruby will dynamically see that you wrote a method that starts with find underscore by and then an attribute, and it will magically try to figure out if that object that you just called the method on has a username object and then do things in the database to go get you that object. And that's amazing for the amount of typing that you have to do and being really productive when you learn the framework and you learn all the little nuances of Ruby on Rails. But when it's 3 a.m. and there's something magical and it's not obvious where it's coming from, you want to get rid of all the magic. You wish you typed every little thing out and you could follow that piece of code. And so Go follows the principle of trying to be non-magical because you will see those things typed over and over again in Go to where there are moments where you'll feel like it's a little painful that you're doing something over and over again. Mm-hmm. But the benefit ends up being that when you look at your file and you're trying to debug a problem, it's all right there. There's nothing hidden. The language in the community itself tries to make things that are really obvious, even if you have to type a bit more. And so there's a balance to, you know, having to type way too much and making tons of mistakes because of it, and not having to type hardly at all, but then also being confused when you go back to figure out what you did. And so I think part of it is being on the Ruby side.
Yeah, and that you're like more hands-on with Go in a way. Like you're having to write everything out yourself. That makes you more intimately familiar with what's happening. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. There's some of that. Part of it is just having been on Rails for so long and having had that magic, you kind of like go, okay, well, I know how I've been bit by this before. It'd be nice if we had a language that enforce that we didn't do those things, you know? So it's almost like a reaction to like, I love Rails. I love Ruby. I think it's a beautiful language and it's enabled us to build CodePen. And I love that. But at the same time, I'm at the point where so many people, and this is a good problem to have, so many people use CodePen when I fat finger something and then find out about the mistake, a dumb little mistake that went out to production, I get frustrated. I'm like, I wish I had a typed language to just tell me, because at this point it's far worse to release that change and piss everyone off because you broke the editor in some way than it is to be forced to do a little bit more work up front in that case. And so it's kind of it's telling of where we are and why we're choosing this thing. I would still choose Rails for a lot of reasons, but I absolutely love Go for working with it and trying to solve the problems that we have today. And so it's very much, I love purpose-built languages that have a very like ideal spot when you're trying to solve a specific problem. I love the idea of being able to have a nice, good set of tools in my toolbox, and Go just really fits into what we're doing right now.
Yeah, it's been kind of a theme lately on the podcast and just in doing CodePen, just that we're at this scale now where we really need to be working with new things that can handle that scale. And yeah. I, you know, based on what I've seen you and Dee do with Go, it's been a huge help to manage our simply massive scale. I mean, it's massive to us anyway, scale.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we've been moving a lot of data around internally. Hopefully you didn't notice. If you did, I'm sorry. But we've been moving data around, cleaning things up to make CodePen easier to determine whether or not we're in a good state and cause fewer bugs because of bad data. And these, when we have these data problems, they tend to like bubble up through the entire code base. You end up seeing Ruby that's trying to figure out if it has the correct value or if it's nil. And then JavaScript does the same thing and it just bubbles up through the entire code base. And, you know, it used to be that we could just be like, oh, it's just, this is a one-off, and you do enough one-offs and you're like, I can't believe how many places we have to do this. We have to check to see if we have the good data. And so we've been trying to clean all those things up, which requires us moving, you know, millions of records around in our database. You know, we, not only is it the scale, but it's also, we've been around 8 years, mm-hmm. and we want to hold on to the 8 years worth of data. It's quite a bit of data. And so along with obviously using obvious tools like SQL for what it's meant for, where we've also, there are times where it's just cleaner and easier and more intelligible to write it in a programming language. So we've started, the way we started with Go is we started writing a lot of scripts to clean things up in the database and move things around. And that allowed us to run things literally from our computers against our databases and not have to worry about if we were configuring everything correctly, because that, these were one-off scripts. So normally we'd write these things in like Ruby rake task and things like that. And so just this past Sunday, I was moving data out of Firestore into our MySQL database. And the way we'd stored the data in MySQL was, or I'm sorry, in Firestore was terrible. It was very difficult. We had to do a lot of munging to get it to finally become a record in our database. And so I wrote the script in Ruby, and I was literally only moving 675,000 records, which isn't like, this isn't some massive number. We should be able to do this. And I wrote a really simple, dumb Ruby rake task, just linear, no parallelism, nothing, you know? And every request seemed like it was taking about 0.5 seconds. And I started running numbers as my little rake task is running and start figuring out that this rake task that I expect to finish sometime today is going to take 3.8 days to finish. And so...
yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, that's, you're, like, that's a really bad feeling. It's, by the way, it's, mind you, it's Sunday, and I'd really like to finish by Monday.
You'd rather do something else, and, yeah, on your Sunday.
Yeah, literally do anything else. And so... at the end of the day, I had to give up on that rake task, and I knew... you know, we've been doing Ruby and things for a long time. So we have things that we can do, run things in parallel, you know, cache things, you know, exit early, all the little things that you would do. But that adds a certain level of complexity, verifying that that script ran correctly and things like that. And so instead of spending my time trying to optimize my Ruby, I was like, you know, we're doing Go all the time. I'm trying to use it for as much as possible. I spent, you know, the next 5 hours or so porting some of that stuff to Go, because we hadn't, you know, we don't have as much that we can rely on in that world. So there's still things that we have to rewrite that are already written in Ruby for us, libraries and things. And so, but I wrote it, got things going, verified that it was moving the data correctly. And in the end, it ran in 1 minute and 10 seconds.
Like, okay.
And I'm not, yeah, and I'm not some amazing Go programmer. I'm literally at the entry level of Go. And I was like, I know I'm writing incredibly basic, simple Go, but it is incredible and really empowering for us to be able to write something like that. It runs extremely quickly. And if I have to rerun it because I made a mistake, I'm not scared. I don't have to be like, oh my gosh, you know, on day three of that rake task, if I realized I made a mistake,
oh,
I would have to wait another 3 days.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that would have been a nightmare for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And granted, like, we're a moving target, right? So like, if CodePen, we do our best. We don't intentionally take down the database if we can avoid it. And so if I'm moving data around, people are still writing to that old table. I have to make sure I grab that old data, the data that that the users have already, that have written before I did my initial export and things like that. And so, it was very, very powerful. And when I've had enough moments like that with this new language, this new tool that we're adding to our toolbox, where it becomes almost, you feel like negligent if you're not using it, if you're not exploring that. Because what we can give our users is a far, far better experience. You know, like, speed is really matters to our users. And so we want to give that to them. So adding this tool is just, it's been really amazing.
That's awesome.
Hey, hey, CodePen Radio listeners. This episode is sponsored in part by Jetpack. Jetpack has just been on a tear this year, releasing great stuff. It's a plugin for your self-hosted WordPress site, a lot like blog.codepen.io is. And in fact, we totally use Jetpack in almost every feature of it. You know, things like, you know, making sure your images are on a CDN and being able to do stuff in Markdown. And, you know, one of the big ones that we did recently on blog.codepen.io is turned on their instance search, which has just been great, and customize it so it just searches the documentation. Because chances are, if you're on that site, that's where we keep our docs. That's what you're searching for. That's what we want to get you to. And I think the search experience, which they call Jetpack Instant Search, has just been tremendous on the CodePen blog. Loving that. But here's another thing that they just released, which is it's like their backups feature too, which is a la carte. If you want backups of your site, either daily or instantly as things happen on the site, which is awesome, you can just be like, I just want that feature only and just buy it. They also just released Scan, which is just like that. It's security for your WordPress site. Super good security. It's like, you know, it's like WordPress themselves looking at your installation to make sure it's all good. And there's no files being weird. Nobody's trying to mess with anything. You know, like, it's just like from the horse's mouth, like security audits of your site. And if you just want that feature, you can just buy that. If you want to pair it with, you know, also buying backups, you can do that. Of course, we do all that because I just think that's important stuff. You know, it's about as important as it gets. Keep your WordPress secure. Check out Jetpack Scan.
So another really good example of something that we've sped up with Go, and this is one that's very dear to my heart because it's my newsletter, The Spark. The Spark used to take almost 2 entire days to go out. We would send it on Monday morning, and then by the beginning of Wednesday morning, it would have completely sent out to the almost 2 million people that read it. I just took that as just, this is how it's going to be. And just understood that it would be rolling out continuously throughout a period of 2 days. And people were getting it at kind of like weird times of day and stuff like that. And it just really wasn't ideal. Now, when I send it out, it's out. All of it's out in like 20 minutes, which is just an incredible, incredible change. I just figured, you know, with the volume that we were sending, that was just how it was just going to be always. So it's amazing to see this change. So I'm curious about how that came to be.
Yeah, that's interesting because that's one of the first things that where I was like, wow, that's incredible. So that change actually ended up being a combination of a few things. It's realizing that Spark Post, our email sender for that newsletter, could handle that load in that small amount of time without freaking out on us as trying to, you know, spam. And so they had their own internal queue, but then it was replacing the queue service that would gradually and slowly send these emails out to our service. And that was a Ruby like sidekick queue service. And so replacing that entire thing with just one simple Go script. We've since upgraded it from running on my desktop where I hit return and execute the little script to something that runs on Lambda in Go. But it really was like, I think it was my personal biggest aha moment. Like, wow, like not only do our users all get the email at the same time, they get it on the same day, but it's actually far simpler for us where we don't, the difference between having to manage a queue where there's, you know, servers and data and state and all these things versus running a simple script that, you know, it takes 20 minutes or so, but it's still one simple run through, makes it incredibly easier for us to manage that entire process. You know, if we mess it up, we can stop it and try again. Like whatever it is that we're doing, we're finally at the scale where if we don't start changing what we're doing and how we're doing it, everything's going to take longer. And then that just has an impact over every single thing we do and our willingness to send out other emails, like feature level emails that feature announcement emails that we've been doing lately. And so not being scared of that is really, it's just empowering for the whole team. And what I can see happening, at least for myself, and I hope that we all start to feel this way, is that we can take on these problems that we kind of had. I had taken a lot of this, the data problems that we'd had, is just like, that's just the way it's going to be. It would be far too painful to try to clean all that up. Like, you know, are you really going to wait 4 days for a simple script? And that's a, you know, 675,000 records is one of the smaller tables. Like, we're not.
Yeah.
We're you know, some tables have 20 million plus records. And so I just take it as like, whatever, we'll live with it. Someday we'll like figure it out. And so having this really dumb little tool where I was like, oh, this is something that I'm just technically interested in to understand how it works and kind of keep up with like industry and see what people are doing, to like, holy crap, like we can do these things that we've been sitting on that we've known that are like a little painful. We can alleviate that pain. And then we can start just kind of like that. When we clean things up or we send emails out in 20 minutes, it enables us to do things that we've wanted to do for ages. And so it's really great and really shows how much you have to think about the problem and choosing the right tool to solve that problem with versus just taking your hammer and seeing nothing but nails, yeah. You know, which is kind of like what we've always done, you know?
Yeah. And having this, you know, just reducing the time, like you said, like it frees up the ability to send email more often and to be able to, I mean, because for example, when that was taking 2 days to send, we would literally run out of days of the week to send stuff in. And so if we wanted to, if we wanted to highlight a feature, we would want to wait to make sure that all of this was completed sending, because you're not going to want to hit people with two email on the same day, you know? So you only got 5 business days in a week. So this gives us the ability to actually use every single one of them. So, because we also have on Monday, we have the challenges that go out, and we also used to have to be super careful to make sure that, you know, I would leave, if I was going on vacation, I would leave notes where it's like, the challenges must go first in like, you know, the biggest font I could possibly do, because it was a much smaller list. And if we put that after the Spark, people wouldn't get the challenge prompt until Wednesday. So it was definitely like something that was very, very brittle and had all kinds of requirements around it that we can, you know, if someone accidentally sent the Spark first on Monday, it's okay. You know, just send the challenges. It's fine. It's only been 20 minutes.
Give it 20 minutes. You'll be okay.
Yeah. So it's a huge difference. Yeah. And it is fun to know that we can bring this flexibility in with, and it's nice to know that it's with a language that everybody's liking working with, which is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. The way I see it is, you know, when I don't see it as like, oh, I'm obsessed with performance. Like we want reliability and like a really good experience for our users. And part of that is performance, but it's not like we're obsessive about it.
I don't know. I've seen some
and
charts.
So
the dev team's been making some charts lately.
Now things are changing and we're getting a little addicted to speed, to be honest with
you. I'm noticing. But,
But the way I see it is, you know, if I have something that is 30 times faster than what I was using before, and I'm using it for the same reason, I feel like, personally, I'm like, I can be 30 times as dumb and still not hit the, you know, still be better than I was before with the previous tool. And so I get to just write really simple. I don't have to be clever about what I'm trying to accomplish when I know I have this thing to rely on. And, you know, I get to appear like I really know what I'm doing, because it's like, hey, I took the email send from, you know, 2.5 days or whatever to 20 minutes. And you're like, wow, that's really impressive. But you just are able to use that tool that makes you look really good. And I love that. It's just like such a fun part of technology, is that you can pick up these new tools and languages and things, and with someone with this like discovery, and be able to really amplify yourself, you know? And so on a small team, it's all about that. Like, how much can we do with the small team that we are? You know, we're only 7 developer, you know, a team of 7.
Yeah.
And so the more that we can do with the small team, great. Like, that's our goal. Like, let's be as effective as possible. And so this has just been a big revelation. So it's allowing us to do more, you know? So it's really exciting.
Yeah. It is always the balance of the tininess of the team and the scale of the product and the scale of the community. It's great to find things like this that can really make us super powered. And I love that it's called Go, because it just has that like feeling of momentum behind it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that was the intention, is just like, you can just go with it. And so it takes a very short amount of time to get going with it. I would encourage anyone to start playing with these technologies. It's really awesome. I mean, even if you don't end up using it for work purposes or anything, you do learn something. You learn a new way to solve things, and you get just a different perspective on things. So I love it for that purpose. That's why I love like reading about languages and things like that, just to get another community's perspective on how they approach problems, how they solve. And they're really sweet. As far as I've seen, they're like, the Go community itself is very inclusive. They are very much about keeping the feel and vibe of a small community that is very inviting. And that's been really nice to see as well. So It has a really good community around it. If you're interested in, if you're a front end dev and you're thinking, hey, I should play with the back end technology, this is a very approachable back end technology in my book. It's, you don't have to manage memory. It has static typing, but it's very lenient with the way it handles it. It doesn't feel overly verbose. And so I think it just hits like a really nice sweet spot for someone who's transitioning from dynamic languages. And so it'll add a little something to your repertoire. And if you're ever faced with a long running task, you feel like you can get it done faster. It's really amazing.
And it ties in with things like you mentioned earlier, like with Lambda and stuff, which is something that with front end devs do dabble with from time to time.
Right. Yeah, that's a really great way to get it into production if you need to. And we all know you get charged by the amount of time your Lambda runs. So it's like, it's not a bad deal to also save a little money if your script runs in a much at faster speed. So a lot of benefits, and it's a really pleasurable language to work with. I find it really easy to learn and get going with.
That's great. Yeah. And Go is the one with that cute little gopher, right? That's their mascot.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. The gopher. A lot of people got upset because they came up with a new logo and people thought they got rid of the gopher. The gopher is the mascot, but he's not the logo.
I see. Okay.
And so, yeah, that's a, you know, common misconception in the Go community. No, they have this cute gopher. Everybody uses it. It's just universally loved.
That's great.
They have a logo, but it's barely recognized next to the gopher.
Wait, so we have a logo, but we do not have a mascot. But this opens up a lot of possibilities for us here at CodePen.
I'd like to nominate myself as the mascot.
I don't think that would fly. I don't think you get to make one of the co-founders the mascot, but maybe, I don't know. If someone could draw a very cute cartoon of you, I guess we could consider it.
That's going to be tough. We're probably going to look for something less difficult to make cute. We actually should get a mascot. That's what we've revealed. Another thing Go has enabled us to do.
Yes, it has opened up
that we need a mascot.
Branding possibilities for Team CodePen. We have learned so much from Go. It's incredible.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we actually have more even to say about Go. There is so much to talk about. Next week, I'm going to be talking to Dee about her work with Go and her experience with learning it. So stay tuned for that. But until next week, take care of yourselves. Be safe out there, everyone. And we will talk to you soon. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye, everybody.
Seven, six, zero, three, one, eight.